It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. One of the visionary leaders in Pittsburgh is a fellow by the name of Bill Strickland. He's the president and CEO of Manchester Bidwell Corporation and its subsidiaries, Manchester Craftsmen's Guild and Bidwell Training Center. He joins us today to talk about his work, his evolution, how he founded the Manchester Bidwell Corporation, and the work that he's done in the decades that he's been involved with it. Bill Strickland, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
You grew up in Manchester. Mm-hmm. Describe the days growing up in that neighborhood, kind of a rough part of town on the north side of the city.
Well, it wasn't always that way. When I grew up there, up to about the age of 15, it was a very multidimensional, multicultural community. Slovak, Italian, Polish, German were there, African American. And there were several foreign languages spoken in my elementary school on the north side. Unfortunately, the riots came. You know, the economic engine of Pittsburgh stumbled and places like Midland Ross and Ellis Chalmers and so forth folded up. So it created a lot of unemployment in that neighborhood. And then there was a lot of people moving out of the community and it began to degrade. But for the first 15 years, it was a pretty remarkable place.
As a student of history, as you're taking all this in, what sorts of ideas and inspirations did that lead you to?
Well, basically that most people are built the same and that the healthy neighborhood is one that has variety of cultures and ideas and beliefs and religious and whatever, and that you need that mixture in order to have a healthy, robust community. The other is to have a close proximity to work so that people who earn a living invest in that neighborhood, oftentimes are employed in that neighborhood. And that's really when you begin to get an economic model that is sustainable. Right now, I would not say it's sustainable. There are some new signs on the north side that are very encouraging, but it went through a very, very bad period in the 60s and 70s and is only now, in my opinion, beginning to dust itself off and you know, look to the future with some optimism.
As a young man, what was the event or events that changed your life and led you on the path that you're still on?
Well, I had a pretty good elementary school and some good teachers. I had a pretty good junior high school. And I went to Oliver High School. The first couple years were really terrific. I met Frank Ross, who got me excited about clay, and I got pretty good at it, and I founded Manchester Craftsman's Guild as a result of that. So my experience in the community up to that point was pretty positive. And the center's still going, obviously, 40-plus years later.
You started this when you were still a student at Pitt, right?
Yeah, 1968.
So talk about trying to get that up and running. I mean, at that time, the concept of the after-school arts program was a relatively new one, wasn't it?
Yeah, but it was during the riots. There was a lot of money pouring into the inner city, primarily to try to calm down the riots. I just happened to be one of the guys standing there. And my idea was to create an arts program to work with kids. So I got a little row house on Buena Vista Street, lived upstairs in a sleeping bag for a while, built a studio in the basement, started bringing kids in off the streets to teach them clay. And I started hearing back that the kids were showing up more regularly at school. And after a couple of years, I figured it out. There wasn't anything wrong with these kids. They needed somebody to believe in them. They needed a predictable and safe environment. And they needed aspirations. And that's what Manchester did, and that's what it continues to do to this day.
And describe the over the decades, the growth that has occurred here, because this is now an institution in our city.
Yeah, it's grown pretty dramatically. I mean, back in the sort of old days, you know, I would be working with probably 10, 15, 20 kids from the neighborhood. We now work with 500 kids each week from all over Pittsburgh. So the program has grown dramatically in that respect. And, of course, we have the jazz program. When we built our center 26 years ago, I had the presence of mind to put a music hall in the north end of the building. And Dizzy Gillespie showed up, and then Ahmad Jamal dropped by. And so it's been quite a run. So it's music, jazz, visual arts, and so forth around the Manchester brand.
It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer, and we're talking with Bill Strickland. He's president and CEO of Manchester Bidwell Corporation and its subsidiaries, including Manchester Craftsmen's Guild, and he has been honored with numerous prestigious awards, including the coveted MacArthur Genius Award. You have, over the years, you envisioned a template for social change, and you've talked about how what you were trying to do with these after-school arts programs years ago, how it would help to channel the energies and perhaps some of the frustration and emotions that kids were feeling into something positive. Talk about how you began to form relationships with businesses, government officials, and individuals who shared your vision to turn this from what might have been viewed by some as a very basic neighborhood program addressing neighborhood needs into something that is a huge part of Pittsburgh's cultural and social.
Yeah. Well, that was triggered by my taking over the Bidwell Center in early 1972. It was stumbling and not doing well, and the directors over at the center asked me to take it over and rebuild it, which I did. And so when I got involved with the Bidwell program, that was vocational education, and that led me to the employment sector and the industry sector. And so I started to build relationships with IBM and Mellon, PNC, and so forth, the University of Pittsburgh Medical Center, so that we built relationships around employment opportunities, and we really built a first-class vocational program that continues to thrive to this very day.
And this was in the early 70s.
Yeah, 1972 is when I took over Bidwell.
So how fortuitous was it to have started this, because it wasn't much later that the mills started closing, the jobs started going away, and here you were providing training for people to learn how to do things other than what the Pittsburgh economy had been based on.
Yeah, that's right. And we've continued to be on that path to this day. And what we've gotten good at is customizing training specific to industries. You know, we now train for Bayer, Calgon Carbon, BASF, Valspar, Nova. It's been quite a story. University of Pittsburgh Medical Center has a lot of our – we have 500 employees that we've sent to UPMC over the years. So it's been a good run. And then, of course, the Hines folks, particularly Senator Hines, when we were building the building, basically contributed $1 million to the facility and building a state-of-the-art culinary program. So we train people for the food industry, and we've been doing that for over 20 years.
And how did that work? Did you approach them, or did they happen to take an interest in what you're doing and say, this would be a good place to channel our money and our resources into?
Well, I certainly knew Senator Hines and a lot of the other folks who were running philanthropies in town, Hillman, Mellon, and so forth. So I got to know them through the work. But when I came up with the idea of building this center, it covered both the Bidwell Vocational Program, the arts program, and so forth. And people were interested in various aspects of that place. They might not be interested in jazz, but they were interested in culinary. You know, they weren't particularly enamored with photography, but they would be interested in talking about chemical technology. So I tried to line up the company's interests with the areas of opportunity, and that's what we've gotten very good at.
And there are all these practical aspects to what you've been doing over the years, but there's man does not sustain himself on that alone. There are so many artistic endeavors. Talk about your passion for that and for jazz in particular. You're a jazz man.
Well, I don't play, but I certainly like to listen to it. And, my high school teacher, Mr. Ross, used to bring in jazz albums, man. And I fell in love with the music. And I said, if I ever have a chance to build a building, I'm building a music hall. So I did, basically. And Dizzy Gillespie showed up in 1986. It was the first concert, and a guy named Billy Taylor. And they back then, I was able to do all the tours, man, you know, the center. And Dizzy said, man, you ought to build one of these things in every city in this country, and I'm going to help you do it.
He was that impressed.
Oh, yeah. I gave him a personal, private tour. I took him into the kitchen. I took him into the classrooms, the whole thing. And at the end of the tour, Dizzy said, you ought to build one of these in every city in this country. I'm going to help you do it. One way I can help you, I'm going to allow you to record the concert. I'm going to give you the rights to the music. And if you sell it, the money has to come back to sports school.
Wow.
So then Herbie Hancock shows up, and he was, you know, over the top. And then the Basie Band, and then Nancy Wilson, and Shirley Horn, Betty Carter, Stanley Turrentine, Kenny Burrell. We've had the greatest living jazz artists over the last 25 years coming to the place. And Marty Ashby, who runs the operation, also developed a recording program. So we've been recording a lot of these concerts, and we've won 6 Grammys for our recordings. So we're a very well-known, important archiver of jazz music, but also presenter, and now obviously in the record industry as well.
So there's this tremendous body of work and a legacy that will endure. But as we address the problems of today, what are the things that you're looking to do? What are the ambitions that you still have?
Well, to build 200 centers around the world, and we've got 8 open and operating. Now, it's not a franchise. We don't own the centers. I don't want to own them. What I want to do is get them built to work with the constituency that we're working with in Pittsburgh, namely poor folks, in public school systems, through the arts, and unemployed adults, as we do here at Bidwell. So right now we have 8 centers open and operating, getting the same outcomes as Pittsburgh with the same constituency, welfare people, single parents, you know, homeless folks, chronically unemployed. And we've been able to turn their lives around in a very dramatic way. And we're graduating over 90% of the kids in every program in 8 cities using the arts as the intervention strategy. And that's turned out to be a big story. So we got 8 open, and we're now working in Chicago, Denver, Los Angeles, and Tacoma. I was there a couple of days ago. So we have 4 cities there. But also in Pennsylvania, we have 1 center open in a place called Brockway, Pennsylvania. And we're building one in Sharon, Pennsylvania. And we're thinking very seriously of going down to Westmoreland County and building one there. So there potentially could be 3 or 4 more centers in Pennsylvania, 8 open across the U.S., 4 more cities signed up, and Israel. I'm pretty sure we're going to build a center in northern Israel. I've been there 5 times. In fact, I'm going out to Pitt to talk about it in an hour. We have Jews and Arabs meeting together. I was there 3 months ago, and Shimon Peres and I met. He loved the idea, encouraged me to keep going. And I met with Jewish and Arab leaders in the same room. In fact, we're hoping to bring several of them to Pittsburgh in the springtime to see the center so they have a better idea of what we're talking about.
So you're putting that degree, it was in history and international studies,
yeah,
correct? So you're putting that to good use. As you look back how far things have come since 1969 when you were just beginning to get your feet under you and get this organization started, you know, this kid out of the Manchester neighborhood, Oliver High School, all that you've accomplished. Put it in perspective. What are your thoughts about?
Well, my thoughts are you can do extraordinary things if you have the right people around you. And, you know, I was born a poor kid in the North Side. I still live there. I'm not going anywhere. And part of the message is to the kids, you don't have to go to the world. You can bring the world to your neighborhood. The other message is, it's not where you start that matters, it's where you end up. And just because you're inner city or poor or, you know, your parents are non-existent, you got a lousy education, does not mean that you have to end the story there. Those are just adjectives. You can build your life into something very meaningful. And we now have centers around the country that are living testimony that this stuff is true. I'm not just making this up. It's real.
Bill Strickland is the president and CEO of Manchester Bidwell Corporation, joining us here in Studio A. Mr. Strickland, it has been a pleasure meeting and talking with you. Thanks so much for joining us on Essential Pittsburgh.
Yes, sir. Nice to be here. You guys do a great job.
And joining us now is Paulu Nzambi, who is someone that we've been looking forward to speaking with. In our interview with Bill Strickland, he mentioned one of his goals is to build 200 similar centers around the world. You are the individual tasked with facilitating the creation of these centers around the United States and internationally. Tell us how this process works.
Well, replication is what we call it. The idea is that we are going to try and replicate what exists here in Pittsburgh on the north side in terms of a youth arts program, an adult career training program in a world-class facility with this unique culture that we have here. And there is a very detailed process that begins with a feasibility study, moves into a planning session where we strategically determine what kind of programs are going to be offered, and then it moves into implementation, which is actually opening the doors of a Center for Arts and Technology in a location outside of Pittsburgh.
So are you replicating all of what goes on here, or are you kind of looking at these specific communities and tailoring the experience of the Manchester Craftsmen's Guild in Pittsburgh to what is needed in these areas?
I wish we could replicate everything that we have here in Pittsburgh, but that's very difficult to do. What Bill Strickland has been able to do here on the north side has taken the balance of his life, essentially. This is a 40-year endeavor. And so in Pittsburgh, we have, you know, a 350-seat concert hall. We have a 40,000-square-foot greenhouse, in addition to the core programs of youth arts and adult career training. So when we talk about replication, what we are doing is we're talking about replicating key components that we see here in Pittsburgh, principally a youth arts program focusing on high school age youth in the after school time period, an adult career training program that is state licensed, that is designed to provide training for individuals to get them into jobs that pay a living wage, that are entry level with an opportunity for advancement. So that really is the core of the program. Now, obviously, we have to tailor the type of programming. Yes, it's youth visual arts programming, but it could be ceramics, it could be photography, it could be digital arts, it could be design arts. So we, in the feasibility process, engage the community to figure out what best suits the needs of that community. We also do the same thing on the adult side. We engage the community through the form of corporate leaders and employers to determine what jobs are in demand in that particular location. And then we try to train for the jobs that already exist in that locale.
And what particular tenets do you follow in the development of these centers?
Well, to hold true to Bill Strickland's model, what has become known as the Manchester Bidwell Education Model, there are certain tenets or elements that we, you know, like to see in these centers. The hardest one to replicate is the culture. And what we mean by that is a culture that is warm and inviting, where every human being is treated with dignity and respect. One of the features that we insist upon is this world-class environment. We believe that the environment in which people learn and grow should be a nurturing environment. It should be clean. It should be orderly. And frankly, it should be beautiful. It should be an environment that inspires a human being to become more than they are when they walk through the doors. And it should be, as to use Bill words, it should look like the answer and not the problem, right?
Who oversees that all these things are happening, that it is a nurturing environment? What, you know, what sort of checks might someone from Pittsburgh do to make sure that what you want in place is in place and that there are no metal detectors and cameras and that kind of thing finding their way into the situation?
Well, fortunately for the National Center for Arts and Technology, which does this work, we work by invitation only. So if we are in a city working with civic leadership to create and sustain a Center for Arts and Technology, it's because the civic leadership in that city has come to Pittsburgh, seen this model, and said, this is something that we want for the people in our city. And when they do that, they tacitly acknowledge, you know, all those elements that we see here. So as we're going through the process of standing up this organization, these are things that we insist on seeing. And frankly, you know, these are things that the civic leadership wants to see in that center. So it's not that we need to enforce these things. They've already sort of bought into the idea of this unique educational and empowering environment. And that's what they're trying to help us recreate in their city with them.
Does the development of these centers lead to job creation in the particular areas that are interested in this?
To some degree, yes, because whenever you set up a Center for Arts and Technology, that center needs to be fully staffed. So there are jobs immediately created to actually run the center. And that's probably the biggest contribution to the workforce that a Center of Arts and Technology makes directly.
And Paulo, in addition to developing other centers in the United States and throughout the world, what are some of the other goals for the Manchester Craftsmen's Guild?
The National Center for Arts and Technology has come to the realization that this model that we are implementing is very unique and has extraordinary application not only domestically but internationally. So one of the things that we look forward to doing is creating a platform where NCAT can really serve as a thought leader when it comes to addressing issues for people who have experienced and live with poverty. The basic core of all this programming is to assist people in making that transition out of poverty into self-sufficiency. So whether it be youth arts and helping kids and young people and students stay in school so they can have a better future as a productive member of society, or whether it be training an adult for a job that exists within their local economy or marketplace, the whole goal of this is to equip people to become productive members of society. The methodology that we're using to make that a reality, we think, has great viability not only in the United States but overseas. So what we would like to see as this process continues to unfold is to be able to create a platform where we can share these best practices and these ideas with other people.
Paulo Nzambi, thank you so much for joining us. We appreciate it.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you.
And with us now is Kevin Jenkins. He's Vice President of Operations for the Manchester Bidwell Corporation. And so much is happening here. Sum up for us the challenges and ultimately the rewards of this tremendous endeavor and all that's happening here.
Yes, the challenges that we experience here are not unlike any other nonprofit in the city. You know, first and foremost, we are a nonprofit organization. So first on the list is fundraising. We're constantly out there seeking funds to fund our programs. And as you've heard, we're a pretty complex organization that does everything from youth arts to jazz to adult career training. So keeping all of those components funded and sustainable, is a challenge that we face just like many other nonprofits.
And it's not as though you're not doing a lot already, but do you see this organization expanding some of what it offers?
The vision that our founder and president and CEO, Bill Strickland, has is that we're always looking to the horizon. We're always trying to be flexible and nimble to respond to what needs are out there in the community. So oftentimes, particularly in our career training program, we do look for other industries as far as the job readiness component goes. So in terms of expansion, we're always kind of looking to the next thing.
And how satisfying is it for you to be running an organization like this?
It's immensely rewarding. Every day something different. So throughout the course of my day, I can be in our music hall listening to a sound check from a premier jazz orchestra to being in one of our studios, watching the kids either do photography or ceramics, or to being in our training center and talking with adults who have made the decision that they want something different for their lives. So every day something different. It's immensely rewarding. I'm just so grateful to be a part of this organization.
Kevin Jenkins, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
And when we return, we'll take you out to the Manchester Bidwell Corporation, the Manchester Craftsmen's Guild here in Pittsburgh. This is Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA. It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. We're looking today at the Manchester Craftsmen's Guild and the Bidwell Training Center. In this segment, we're turning our attention to the adult education programs offered by the Bidwell Training Center. And now we're with Valerie Njai, who is head of the Adult Career Center Training Division. She has oversight over the 7 adult career training majors that are offered here. Valerie Njai, good to speak with you.
Wonderful to be here with you today.
You oversee the Bidwell Training Center Adult Career Training Division. How has this division grown?
Oh, we initially started as a training program in the community, vocational trades, and we've evolved into a career center, which is state licensed and nationally accredited. And our focus now is on healthcare programs, chemical laboratory technician, culinary and horticulture sciences.
Tell us how this particular division of the training center for adults differs from the rest of the organization.
Bidwell, our focus is adults only. And we are here to train individuals for jobs. A lot of individuals think that we're that they can come and take advantage of the culinary program just to learn to cook better or to be able to plant and design flowers. That is not our purpose. Our purpose is to get individuals back to work in jobs that exist in the region.
And what are the training majors that are offered here?
We currently have an associate program in chemical laboratory technology, a culinary arts program. We have medical claims processing, medical coder, electronic record, medical assistant, and pharmacy technician.
How many people do you place?
I think the question is, how many do we train each year? And we train approximately 175 students in our career program. We service maybe an additional 200 individuals in our academic remedial program. And out of those, we at Bidwell, for the past 2-3 years, have been placing anywhere from 75% to 100% of the students, depending upon the major. So we look at it as how many graduate and how many of those graduates actually do find work in a training-related job.
What are their expectations? These adults who come here, they want to work. What are their expectations, and what are your expectations for them?
Hopefully we have the same expectation and purpose, and that is employment. Many of our adult students have experience. They've been in the workforce. Maybe there are jobs that they have been laid off from or jobs that they just want to get away from. We also have individuals who have never worked before. Our people are in transition. So their expectation is that they're going to be in a different place when they finish the program than they are today.
Valerie, you mentioned that there is a high percentage of people who participate in this program who get placed in jobs. How do you account for that?
Well, from the very beginning, our applicants know that this is a huge commitment. Our programs are full-time. Monday through Friday, they're here all day. And the programs that they are accepted into, they are aware that industry is heavily involved. We design our programs with the corporations so that at the completion of training, there are jobs that exist. Our students have a lot of experiences with the corporations while they're in the program. Several of the programs have externships, so they're actually out in industry working, and many get jobs, you know, immediately following their externships. But we're talking about real jobs. We're not talking about things where they have to relocate or something that existed before. Because of these strong partnerships and our program advisory boards, our students are very, very successful because the jobs do exist.
And we're talking about jobs in Pittsburgh.
We are talking about jobs in the region. We are talking about employment that or livable wages, and we're also talking about entry-level jobs that are going somewhere. It's not uncommon for our students to start in one position, and then, you know, a year or two later, they have had several promotions. Many of our students leave here, and the corporations they work for actually send them back to school. So we promote lifelong learning and employment. And the other thing that I think our students look at is how much they change, how much they are able to go back and not just make a difference in the lives of their family members, but also their communities. And so often we get testimonials about how much they have just as individuals have changed, and they, you know, they can experience giving back.
And what's the duration of the program?
We do have 7 programs, and each program is a different length. The shortest one is 7 months, and the longest one right now is 13 months.
What kind of feedback do you get from the business community?
Our feedback is continuous because, again, through these program advisory councils that meet with our staff on a regular basis, they are sharing with us the kinds of changes that need to be made. So they are extremely thrilled with our graduates. Whenever there are occasions when they are not That's something that they share with us. If it's an externship or a volunteer kind of experience, we get ongoing. We get constant feedback. And again, that's why the program, that's why the school is so successful, because of these strong partnerships and relationships that we have with the corporate sector.
Valerie and Jai, pleasure meeting you. Thank you so much for joining us.
You're welcome.
Start cleaning up. Sous chef, you're going to gather all the apples. Let him gather all the apples.
As Valerie mentioned, one of the Bidwell Training Center's programs for adults is in the culinary arts. We spoke to Keith Butler, an instructor in the program.
Hi, I'm the culinary instructor here at Bidwell Training Center. I work with primarily adults, and my job is to oversee the kitchen aspect of the program. And my main focus is to have the students prepare lunch for faculty and staff every day. So my job is to make it realistic, just like in the workforce. So we give them challenges, but my job also is to put them in positions to succeed. Because I think once they succeed, it grows confidence, and that's what I try and do every day here at the school. But it's a great program because it simulates the workforce. There's no other program like this. Because it actually gets them prepared for jobs when they go out in the workforce. The program is 11 months, but they're with me in the kitchen. They prepare lunch for faculty and staff for about 7 months. And we go through different cycles and regions and also anoint a sous chef who runs the kitchen. Oh, but I have their back, but they make the schedule. They make just to do some managerial skills. They make the schedule and they oversee the staff and rearrange staff and just to give them some managerial skills to go out there also.
When we return, our look at the Manchester Craftsmen's Guild and the Bidwell Training Center continues with a focus on after-school arts education.
It's crazy to think about your directions and the way your life could have gone without a center like this.
It's Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA. It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. Our look at the Manchester Craftsmen's Guild and the Bidwell Training Center continues with a focus on after-school arts education.
My name is Eric Reuter. I'm the Director of Public Relations at Manchester Bidwell Corporation. And right now we're in the Youth Arts Administrative Area. This is where our youth arts after school students, primarily high school age, come in, check in. The teachers get to see them, get to feel the temperature of the students, figure out how they're doing today, and then they get to go into the classes. And now we can actually go to a classroom. So I think ceramics is probably the best classroom to see because it's closest to the heart of what we do here at Manchester Bidwell and really ties into the story that Bill Strickland has of his experience as a youth and what set him on the right path. So right now it's our after-school programming. We'll have students on the wheels making all sorts of different kind of ceramic products. And we really try to have the most up-to-date equipment possible so that if students have a vision of something that they want to make, they can actually accomplish it here. So we tell them to dream big, not dream small. So right now in the ceramic studio, we're also doing some training for our affiliate site in Brockway, Pennsylvania. So their youth arts instructors are here learning about processes and culture of our organization from our teaching artists.
We're continuing now with Dave Diley, who is the head of the Youth Arts Education Division. He's responsible for the after-school program. Dave Diley, welcome.
Thanks.
In your role as head of the Youth Arts
Education Division. Tell us how this program has evolved.
Well, how the Youth Arts Program has evolved is starting in the Manchester neighborhood with Bill Strickland himself, inviting youth in off the streets to engage with the process of making ceramics. It's grown all the way to the facility we're in today that expands out to photography, the digital arts, design arts, as well as ceramics.
This is an after-school program, but do you work in conjunction with any of the school districts in the area?
Yes, we do work primarily with the Pittsburgh Public School District. 99% of the students that attend our programs come from the Pittsburgh Public Schools. That being said, we don't turn students away that show up for programming. So we do have some attendance from charter schools, private schools, homeschool students, as well as even some from suburban districts.
What's the primary goal of the program?
The primary goal is to truly give students an experience that they feel they achieve something they're proud of, that they actually work along with inspiring artists to be mentored truly through these processes of tactile, hands-on experiences. So we feel that these experiences empower the students to be able to apply not what they learn in the studios, not only to the arts, but to other aspects of their life, to everything from science and math that they apply in the classroom to achieve these goals, to just appreciating other neighborhoods that they may not be familiar with, other experiences beyond their communities and their schools that they are from.
And David, you might have already answered this, but does the work of the Youth Arts Division go beyond developing students' skills in the arts?
It truly does. The experiences to the word of our mission is to educate and inspire youth through the arts. This is achieved not only from our low student-to-teacher ratio, so we have a 1-to-8 student-teacher ratio. These teaching artist mentors, they look eye to eye with each one of these young children, each one of these students, knowing their names and actually listening to their voices. And that's critically important. The mentorship component is really what is happening here beyond the hands-on tactile engagement.
Where are the teachers in your program? Where are they coming from?
The teachers in our program are truly practicing artists. So we have a full-time staff of teaching artists, mentors that work with the students both in the daytime and in the after-school time. So you'll find the teaching artists of Manchester Craftsman's Guild exhibiting at art exhibitions, at arts festivals. They have a presence, whether it be online sales through their arts. So there are truly practicing artists as well as teaching artists in our program.
What's the level of engagement with the students? How do they approach these lessons? Is this merely a place to go for them after school, or are they really committed and interested in art?
Interestingly, I learn from the students as much as they learn from us. And to answer that question, I feel that the students are affected by this world-class environment that we create. They're treated with dignity and respect on the moment they walk through the doors. We have no metal detectors. We have no cameras watching the students. So truly, I feel that they take this opportunity more serious than they may take others. And this is from the students' words themselves. And what I mean by that is, when asked what this means to the students, these engagements we have, these courses, they tell us that it's more like a job experience for them or something. They usually don't go immediately to the social aspects of this that are very positive, as well as the entertainment, the fun that it is in engaging in many of these processes. A lot of times they go specifically to what a wonderful opportunity it is to with the learning that happens through these processes and how it really makes them appreciate other aspects of their life.
They learn the creative side of the arts. What about an education in terms of the business of the arts?
As for the students, understanding how these experiences can apply to the real world, we greatly pride ourselves on giving these students a world-class opportunity. Well, how we define that is we parallel the learning that happens with both industry and higher education. So what these students are experiencing immediately translates into whether it be an internship in the job place or into a college experience.
What is the age of your students and how long are they in the program?
Annually, Manchester Craftsman's Guild Youth and Arts serves around 400 unique students. Their age ranges from 9th, 10th, 11th, and 12th grade, so it's high school age. And it's a self, it's a choice for them to actually get engaged with these programs, so they're self-selecting. So they can be with us all 4 years. Some of them are with us multiple days a week for all 4 years, so there's many hours of contact. A notable outcome with the students that attend our programming is that their graduation rate is above 99%, which that means the students are graduating from their home schools at a rate of 99 and above percent of on-time graduation. And that's really something we're very proud of, considering that we are working with nearly 700 students annually. And again, 99% of those students are coming from the Pittsburgh Public School District.
David Diley, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
Manchester Craftsmen's Guild's after-school programs don't just impact students during their school years, they can have a lifelong impression. In fact, Marco Biddle started off as a student and went on to become an instructor.
So I'm Marco Biddle, an alumni, former staff member, and I now work as the Director of Youth and Arts Programming for the Brockway Center for Arts and Technology, which is one of the replications of the Manchester Craftsmen's Guild. I tell people today all I try to do is replicate the experiences I had in high school for the students in Brockway today, but you'll hear Bill Strickland say, you know, art saves lives. It's crazy to think about your directions and the way your life could have gone without a center like this. Both of my sisters are drug addicts, you know, sell their bodies. I don't have any communication with, really, family I came from was three generations, now four generations of drug addiction, criminal activity, you know, and I sort of just happened to fall in here. So my very first day of coming over to the Manchester Craftsman's Guild, I was a freshman in high school over at Carrick High School, and there was this senior girl, real hot babe, and she says, you know, oh, you should come, you're good at drawing, you should come over with me to this art center. And I'm like, baby, I'll follow you anywhere. So that day I fell in love. I didn't fall in love with the girl, but I fell in love with the Manchester Craftsman's Guild. I was a student here all 4 years through high school. Then I interned here in college, got my certification in art ed from Carlo, and then worked here for 3.5 years, and then taught for 10 years in the public school system in Philadelphia, greater Pittsburgh area, and now help replicate the centers.
So my name is Jeff Guerrero. I'm a teaching artist at the Manchester Craftsman's Guild. Today I'll be teaching a class called Studio Pottery in the Ceramic Studio, and it is pretty much what it sounds like. It's a pottery class that takes place in a studio. So this class gives the students a lot of opportunity to explore the studio and to explore their own interests in pottery. So I have some students who want to make stuff on the potter's wheel, and they're working diligently towards that. Other students want to make sculptural objects. Some students prefer to hand build. For example, Martha's been making ceramic bento boxes, whereas another kid is just happy, you know, to cut her name out of clay and, you know, line up the letters to spell it. So it's a lot of fun, and, you know, of course, we have world-class facilities here, so the students get to experience collegiate level or above techniques and processes like reduced oxygen atmosphere firings and things like soda firing. They can use porcelain as well as stoneware.
It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer, and joining us now is Marty Ashby. He's the head of the jazz program, Manchester Craftsman's Guild Jazz. Not only is he responsible for the presentation series that runs from September through May, he also runs the recording studio, which has won 6 Grammy Awards. Marty Ashby, welcome. How are you?
I'm fantastic. Thanks for being here today.
The Manchester Craftsmen's Guild is well known for its award-winning music program. What do you believe is the key to the program sustaining its level of excellence?
Well, fundamentally, I think it's about the quality. One thing, as you heard when you spoke with Mr. Strickland, is we're all about quality and consistency thereof. When the artists come here to perform, they really fall in love with the overall concept of what we do. It's not just about another gig, another concert that they happen to be in Pittsburgh to play. They all tour the facility, they eat the food, they see the art, they understand the work that we're trying to do for the community. So, ergo, the concerts that happen on the stage are really special. They don't happen anyplace else in the world, and we've been able to capitalize on that.
Would you tell us about the presentation series that runs from September through May?
Sure. We're currently in our 28th season, believe it or not, of running these concerts. There's been thousands of concerts. They begin, as you say, in the fall and run through the spring. It varies between 30 and 50 concerts, depending on what's going on in the time of year. Most of the artists are in for a day or two, so we have them not only to do the concerts, but engage in the community in a variety of ways with workshops and other recordings and so on and so forth. Going out and see Roger Humphreys on Thursday night in the club and do some other things. We've been fortunate that over the 28 seasons, it's been a veritable history of this music, from the Nancy Wilsons to the Herbie Hancocks to the Dizzy Gillespies to the Max Roaches and on, that we've been able to share those artists with Western Pennsylvania.
How do you account for all of the talent that comes through here? Where does this influx of young people with their interest in talent, where does it emanate from?
Well, I think that jazz is very vibrant right now. We find that young people are gravitating towards jazz in a very profound way because jazz represents a certain amount of freedom, a certain amount of democracy on the bandstand. If you and I are part of a jazz trio here and I play something, you're going to play back to me what I'd like you to play. So it's a little bit of embodiment of the golden rule is what jazz is really all about, that I treat you the way you want to be treated and vice versa. And I think in this day and age, what we see specifically with young people is that's something that's very important that they need to grasp onto that. And Pittsburgh has been a community that has nurtured jazz in such a profound way with the artists from Stanley Turrentine to Billy Strayhorn to Ahmad Jamal and on and on, these great artists from Pittsburgh. We've been blessed to have artists like Roger Humphreys and Dwayne Dolphin and Joe Negri and Nelson Harrison that stayed in this community that have nurtured the next generation of the Brett Williams, who's out on the road with Marcus Miller right now, and these other great musicians that are touring the world representing Pittsburgh in a very, very, very important way in this music.
Do alumni of the jazz program come back and work with current students?
Yeah, our education program has varied over the last 28 years, the kinds of things that we do. I'm happy to say that many of the students that have gone through elements of our jazz program here are now coming back and working with us, like Paul Thompson, who runs the program at Kappa Performing Arts School here. He's one of our guys that kind of grew up here, as did little James Johnson, who grew up on the bandstand, and Marcus, Brett Williams, who's with Marcus, and many of the other great musicians in the area that have kind of gone on to travel the world, all kind of grew up watching concerts and being part of what we do here.
Marty Ashby, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for being here. My pleasure.
We hope you've enjoyed our look at the Manchester Craftsmen's Guild and the Bidwell Training Center. Thanks for listening to Essential Pittsburgh. We welcome your comments and story ideas at esspgh@wesa.fm. And you can catch the entire show at wesa.fm or as a podcast. This is 90.5 WESA, Pittsburgh's NPR station. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. Thanks for listening.